CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. In a joint statement, the G7 nations and in Japan said they were, quote, imposing further sanctions and measures to increase the cost to Russia and those who are supporting its war efforts in order to, quote, starve Russia's war machine. The statement went on to say, we are also building on the success of our efforts to ensure that Russia is no longer able to weaponize the availability of energy against us and against the world. I turn to Michael Bernstam of the Hoover Institution, who's been my guide on the sanctions regime. We're in the second year of the war, and the G7 meeting was adamant about more sanctions on Russia. The question is, what about the sanctions right now that are being adjusted by members of the international trading community, such as India, keeping the funds flowing to Russia? Michael, a very good evening to you. It looked like the G7 is unanimous, except we noted that Mr. Zelensky, in attendance, thanks to a French airplane, did speak directly to Mr. Modi about his country and the Russian oil that is then refined and sold to the world. In fact, in general, how India is used as a cutout for Russian energy, not the good old days of high profits, but certainly enough cash. You have made it very clear over many months that what we're witnessing is the success of globalization. How so, Michael?
Everything is interconnected. India is now a major refinery source and sells refined oil. Recently, a very interesting report was published in Finland, again, globalization. And it is called Laundromat. It says that it turns out that now a lot of refined oil products, such as diesel and jet fuel, the European Union receives from India. European Union banned all supplies of refined oil products from Russia. Russia sells crude oil to India. India refines and resells major income for India, resells to the European Union and even to the United States. $8 billion worth to the United States, about $20 billion worth to the European Union. So India is a great beneficiary in this case of these sanctions because it sells refined products, buying crude oil at discount. India used to buy only 2% of its oil supplies from Russia in 2021. Now it buys over 20%. But now India is threatened by the new sanctions because it so happens, it's kind of a small detail, you would think. So happens that G7 wants to limit or ban the sale of export of Russian diamonds. No big deal. $4 billion worth of for international trade, it's a small amount for Russia. But India is a major producer. It cuts and polishes diamonds. 90% of all diamonds that are cut and polished in the world are done in India. And now India will lose a lot of income if there is a ban on diamond trade. Belgium is against it because they may lose 10,000 jobs in Antwerp and other places of diamond dealers and diamond brokers. But India may lose 1 million jobs because of this. So it's all complicated. We're in a global village here.
And the appeal then to India to not sit on the fence doesn't make economic sense, common sense for Modi. He's, in fact, the case you're presenting is that the limits of sanctions are globalization. Is that the way to think of it, Michael?
Yes, it is the world market. Everything is connected. Now you look at the country, one of the richest countries in the world, Switzerland. Switzerland is now having a shortage of medical drugs, which is vital for Switzerland. Why is it so? Because blister packs that are used for pills to sell drugs were produced in Ukraine, and now Ukraine was bombed and destroyed these factories, and they cannot provide these supplies for Switzerland, and Swiss patients suffer. So everything is interconnected. India is a great beneficiary of the sanctions on the oil side, and that's why Russia wanted to pressure India to speak against putting Russia on the list of financial money laundering countries. And India is kind of sitting on the fence because on the one hand, it doesn't want to break relations with the West. On the other hand, it greatly benefits from this oil refinery business.
We go to Beijing. Reuters reporting in these last hours, a significant diplomatic change. Russia's prime minister signed a set of agreements with China during a trip to Beijing, describing bilateral ties at an unprecedented high, despite criticism of their relationship in the West. Prime Minister Mikhail Mishustin, the highest-ranking Russian official to visit Beijing since Moscow sent thousands of troops to Ukraine, held talks with Chinese President Xi Jinping and Premier Li Qiang. Michael, this is now out in the open. We've known that Beijing is supporting Moscow for a year. The question is it lethal? Is it something that contributes to the war machine? Or are they trading parts? This doesn't set any limits whatsoever. They're now in a tight economic relationship, and lethality is not a problem any longer. I could not have imagined this happening a year ago. Was this logically inevitable, Michael, that they would fall together?
No, their relationship is very complicated. The Chinese were very angry when Russia moved its nuclear weapons to Belarus because China is against this proliferation of nuclear weapons. And when the president of China visited Russia, the Russian president promised not to do it, and then they did it 2 days later. So they greatly insulted China. At the same time, China is angry about Western policies towards Taiwan. So it's all complicated, but the trade relationship itself is very important because China greatly benefits again from this refined product from refined products from Russia and from discounted oil. It buys oil for a discount. Now Russia has become, instead of Saudi Arabia, the largest oil supplier for China. China refines oil and resells some of this oil to the European Union, making a lot of profit. At the same time, China is a global champion of electricity. So it helps Russia in its war effort by selling electronics. At the same time, Chinese banks are afraid of secondary sanctions, and they are not giving Chinese exporters letters of credit. So it's all very complicated, and China is trying to kind of, as usual, to be a double dealer in this.
Finally, Hungary. We have about a minute. You can explain this quickly. Hungarian Prime Minister Mr. Orban criticizes EU sanctions against Russia. What does Hungary want? Because they need unanimity to keep the sanctions regime going.
Hungary, like everyone else, has its own agenda. It so happened again by an accident of war that there was one particular major Hungarian bank, OETB, which helped Russia in its war effort. So Ukraine put the bank on the list of war sponsors. So Hungary now wants this bank, which is important for Hungary, to be removed from this list. And until and unless it is removed, they don't want to support sanctions. So if Ukraine removes this bank from the list, immediately Hungary joins the West and supports the sanctions.
Globalization. Michael Bernstam of the Hoover Institution helping us with sanctions and their limits. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.